Hello and welcome to Before Our Friends Die. You're joined by me, Kavan, and this is the Aki and Saltfish Digital Network. Now, I want you to cast your mind back way back to April 2023, where Rachel and I had a conversation with Jane Pilcher and Hannah Deacon-Smith talking all about names. Well, guess what? That conversation was fueled by an article I saw on Wonky by this lady right here, Farhana Chowdhury or Williamson. We'll get to that in a second. And that was all about names in academia. So I want to get stuck straight in to a few important things on that topic. So first of all, thanks for joining me so much, Farhana. Really appreciate it and really appreciate your company today. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. So like I said, you know, we had a conversation in April last year about names, and it was really, really fascinating. And there was a Jane Pilcher, for those that don't know, that was episode 28 of Before Our Friends Die. And Jane is an academic. And her role in academia is all about, you know, looking at the sociology of names, onomastics. So studying why we choose certain names, the context in which names become important, and the context in which names become incredibly relevant to people's identities. So check it out if you're interested in that. But Farhana, the real genesis of all these conversations was a colleague sent me your article and said, look, I think this will really, really resonate with you, because she knew my name gets butchered all the time. And I read it and I refreshed myself with your article the other day, and it just hits the nail on the head every single time, because it's so, so relevant and it's so, so important. So I think the natural place to start with this questioning is, what does your name mean?
Okay, so it's quite a funny story. So my parents named me Farhana, thinking it meant intelligent in Arabic. But I think it was like I was a few years old and they realised it actually meant happy. So luckily for me, the name had a good meaning anyway.
Yep.
Different to what they thought, but still a good name. And I remember they just thought, okay, it's such a great name. We want you to have this name, obviously, growing up. And I remember in school feeling really out of place with my name and insisting for years that they call me Hannah, because it's quite like an anglicized version of Farhana. Mm. But growing up now, I absolutely love my name, and it's perfect for me.
What do you think some of the, I guess, pressures were that made you want to go to Hannah?
So I think growing up, the school that I was in wasn't very diverse. There wasn't many South Asians in my primary school. And I remember back then my name was being butchered all the time. Mm. And I was like, oh, I just want to fit in. I want to have like a traditional name. And I was like, Farhana isn't traditional. And I think that lack of diversity just made me feel like really out of place and like I didn't quite fit in. But now looking back, I'm quite embarrassed that I ever felt like it was a thing that I should have done. And I'm really glad that my parents didn't listen to me and were insisting, no, your name's Farhana. We chose that name for you. It's a beautiful name. And yeah, you'll get used to it. And they were right.
Do you think at the time they were conscious of the lack of diversity in the school and the impact that was having on you? Or do you think it was actually a matter of, no, hang on, we've called you Farhana. You need to go by that name. We're not going to let you change it. Do you think they were conscious of the long-term effects of if you change your name and the way you were sort of conforming to, like you say, the anglicized version of your name?
I think it was a bit of both. Because I don't know, we never really had these conversations as much growing up. Diversity and inclusion wasn't really a thing that we ever spoke about in the household. I think they were hoping that I would come to see the beauty of my name and where I'm from and the traditional aspects. And I'm really happy that they stuck to their guns. And growing up now, we've had those conversations. And when we come to my name change, we had a few conversations about that as well. But yeah, I'm sorry, I've forgotten your original question.
So I was saying, do you think your parents sort of chose it, sort of stuck to their guns on Farhana through understanding the impact that would have from an inclusion point of view, or was it sort of a pride point that, hang on, we've chosen this name and we're not going to let you change it?
Definitely both. And I think they loved the meaning of the name as well when they came to know the real meaning of happy. And yeah, they've just thought, I think they're big believers of what your name becomes what you are. And they're right, I am very happy, and I am happy with my name as well.
Good. So I mean, talking of what we thought Farhana meant in terms of intelligent, you've got quite a journey in academia. So you mentioned wanting to change your name in primary school. What was the rest of school like for you?
Oh, God. Okay. So in year seven, I had a supply teacher who became a long-term teacher that year, and she kept calling me Farhana.
Wow.
And I corrected her several times, and she was like, I can't say it. I can't say Farhana. I'm going to keep calling you Farhana. And then for the rest of that school year, she did just call me Farhana, and I was like, oh, okay, well, I'll just get used to it. And stopped correcting her. And growing up through school, my name did get misspelt, mispronounced a lot. And to me, that was completely normalized. And then we get to, like, throughout my career, I worked in a bank for a year. I didn't really send any emails, so I didn't really notice my name being misspelt. And then I worked at the Life Science Centre, and my job didn't really require me to send many emails. It was mainly talking to people. So didn't really notice anything with my name then. But then I get to academia, and I worked as a research assistant for a year, and my name was, I had to send quite a few emails. I noticed my name getting misspelt, and I didn't think too much into it. Get to my PhD, I'm sending a lot of emails, and then I'm seeing my name being misspelt quite a lot. And I was like, oh, you know, it's normal. I'll get used to it. And I think there was one day where I was in an email chain with a person. They misspelt my name twice in that email chain, but two different ways. So I got called Farahana and Farahana. And I was like, oh, God, like, this is too much. And I think I started to procrastinate, and I was putting off my tasks, and I made a collage of all the different names I got called throughout that year. It's quite a big collage.
That's creative.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I was putting off some of my PhD jobs. So I thought, yeah, I'll make a collage, see all the things I got called. Then my husband came home from work, and I was like, got called two different names again today. And he was like, that's ridiculous. And I showed him the collage. He's like, you need to show your supervisor that. And I thought, that's quite a strange thing to say. I was like, well, why would I do that? He's like, it's not right. You know, you should really draw attention to this. So I was like, I don't know. I don't want to look like I'm causing a fuss or complaining. And I think that's quite, I think a lot of people do that when they have these kinds of issues. They just try and minimize it. And I did email my supervisor, Candy. She's absolutely fantastic. She's a complete ally, and I can't say enough good things about her. And she didn't minimize it at all. She was like, I can't believe, like, you've experienced this. We can definitely do something about it. And she immediately sprang into action. She was sending emails to the EDI team and to the EDI committee, and really drew attention to it. And she's like, there's definitely things we can do about it. We can write an article, we can share your experiences, just really draw attention to it. And that made me realize, like, oh, I don't have to put up with this. Like, it's completely disrespectful. It's not something that anyone should be experiencing, because there are long-term effects to it. And I think, yeah, we can get to that if you want.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the things you mentioned was it became normalized throughout your schooling career. Completely normalized that people would get your name wrong, and you sort of just had to accept it, particularly those in power would get your name wrong as well. And that was impactful.
Yeah.
So then later on, you referenced when your name was said wrong in emails or things like that, you didn't want to make a fuss. You didn't want to be the person that made a fuss and didn't want to make something out of it. So it actually stands to reason that if those things become normalized over time, you simply saying, sorry, can I just stop you there? My name's my name's Kavan. That disrupts the normal. So it's natural to feel like that is problematic, but it's not. And I guess that's why we're having these conversations, to affirm for those that get their names pronounced wrong, that it's not disruptive to correct people when saying your names. But equally, you mentioned Candy there being an ally. And I think that's a really, really great side of this story to tease out as well, because I noticed that the article on Wonky, that is linked below in the description, by the way, it is co-written between yourself and Candy. And it's a really great insight into, one, the life experiences of someone who gets their name consistently pronounced and spelt wrong, but also the power and the support that an ally can provide to correct those situations, both in those individual interactions, but also systemically as well, because there's a lot of calls to action to change the system, which is really cool. So you mentioned your time as a PhD student. What is your PhD in?
So my PhD is psychology based. It's about changing human behaviour to improve animal welfare. So my background is psychology. I did my degree in psychology, then a master's in health psychology. And human behavior is something I'm just really interested in, and especially like what how decisions get made. So that's how I kind of, well, I worked on the EDI toolkit as a research assistant, and that was about changing behavior to become visible allies and
Nice.
champion equality, diversity, and inclusion. And then Candy is actually the one who drew my attention to that PhD. So I think you'd be really, really good at it. It's about human behavior change, but in a different sort of context. So it's quite a multidisciplinary project. So I'm working with experts in health psychology and intervention sciences. So it's been a really good project to work on, because I'm learning so much.
And so, ironically, I work in a university, but my grip of the academic side is loose, shall we say. So, because you're doing your PhD, that makes you an early career researcher, is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, your experiences as an early career researcher, what does that mean? So, for those that are listening that aren't in the world of academia, what does it mean to be an early career researcher?
So, before I actually was in academia, I thought an early career researcher was people who are doing their degrees degrees which have some research in it, like when you're doing a thesis or a dissertation. But no, I thought a PhD was a mid-career researcher, but I was completely wrong. And when you're doing your undergrad and you have PhD students who are helping you out in modules, you think, oh yeah, they've really got it together, they're well into their career. But it's not the case at all. It's the start. You learn so much during your PhD, and that's where you decide what you're going to do next in your career, whether you continue in research or do something in industry. So it's quite a exciting part of your life, I think, when you're doing a PhD and deciding what to do next.
So what have you learned? I know you're coming towards the end of your PhD, so that sort of crossroads of industry or academia, where do you think your head's at on that?
I don't know. I love research, so that's what I want to continue doing, but whether I do it in academia or take my skills in industry, I think I've still got a little bit of time to decide, but I'm keeping all my options open.
Yeah, I think with that background in human behaviour, I think that's going to be in high demand right now. With the idea of everything wanting to get our attention and competing for our attention, if you can be the person that walks in the office and gives Meta the nudge to say, actually, tweak Instagram like this and you'll keep people's attention for 5% more money.
There's definitely different ways to apply what I'm learning. So my project is developing an intervention to change behavior. So, but it's in the context of mouse handling. So it's encouraging people to use tunnel handling to lift up mice when they're doing research rather than grabbing them by the tail. But the way that I've worked on this intervention is using a lot of stakeholder engagement, finding out why people do what they do and what are the barriers, what are the facilitators, and then tailoring an intervention to suit that specific audience. I think you can do that with anything, in any context. So I'm really excited to see what I do next.
And just to pick up on something you mentioned there, you said your work is looking at using sort of tunnel tube things to lift up the mice rather than lift them by their tails. People lift them by their tails. That's practice.
Yeah, that was a traditionally accepted method for picking up mice for years.
Wow.
And years. And Professor Jane Hirst released a paper in 2010 which revealed that if you lift them up by the tail, it causes the mice anxiety and depression and stress.
Not surprised.
So, yeah. It's taken a long time for people to actually accept the method of tube handling and using tunnels. But my research has shown that more people are doing it, but there are specific circumstances where they feel like they can't, like when a mouse escapes on the floor. So video will be showing people how to pick up the mice with the tunnel when they're on the floor or when they're about to escape, so people can like grow their confidence more in high risk situations.
That is fascinating. I think we might have to get you on for a part two, because I'd love to know more about mice and particularly that decision making process. So when you're ready, let's pick up the conversation, please.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know, we've sort of touched on how your name and it being mispronounced and misspelt had an impact on you as an early career researcher, but also beyond that as well. But if I may, you could have just left that in your house. You could have just left that between you and your supervisor. But I think you've done a really, really noble thing in putting it on a platform like Wonky to share your learnings and share your recommendations. What was the genesis of turning that experience that you had into an article?
So Candy and I thought we can definitely share the experience through a newsletter, through an article. And we did it internally through the Biosciences Institute newsletter, and that was really well received. And then we wrote the article for a wider audience and sent it to a few different places for publishing. I remember one of the places rejected it, but in the email, they actually misspelt my name.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my God, the irony. And that kind of spurred me on to find more homes for it, for the article.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, and they never replied when I corrected them.
That is actually shocking. Like, you would think, like, oh my, you'd think you'd at least put in the effort to, on that particular topic, with that particular article, to get it right. But it just goes to show how normalised it is. Like,
yeah. Yeah, wow. And I was like, okay, this needs, it does need to be spread, because if I'm sending it to people who are aware of the topic and are rejecting it but still spelling my name wrong, it does need to get, yeah, a bit more widely distributed.
So I want to get into the article a little bit. Because when I was first reading it, it sort of got, I got the impression that Candy was the sort of protagonist and the narrator of it. But I could see, particularly in the second half, your influence and your experiences shine through. So what was that sort of dynamic like? Was it something that, you know, Candy suggested, or did you suggest it? And particularly as well, one thing I noticed, and the same colleague who sent me this article told me this trick as well that happens in academia. Sometimes if you're an established academic and you want to provide a platform for somebody else, you'll let their name go first in an article, and your name is first on Wonky. And I thought, ah, okay, so this is a real life example of someone saying, okay, here's a platform, let's do it together, and let's move forward positively. So yeah, is it written from Candy's perspective, or is it written from your perspective, or is it a combination of both?
It's a combination of both, but Candy is such a great ally, and she's very aware of, you know, her powers and her privileges, and she's very good at putting me forward for things and putting me in the lead. And I think this is one of the examples of this, by putting my name first.
Yeah.
That was a conscious decision, suggested by Candy.
Brilliant.
And she's so good at that. She it was more of a collaboration, so she did have a lot of input in it, but the main thing she wanted to get across was the recommendations and the real life lived experiences. And that was one of the conversations we had, is the fact that the misnaming probably made me, because I suffer a lot from imposter syndrome, and possibly the misnaming led to that, because I just felt like, you know, if my name's not getting valued and spelt correctly, like, it's just asking for the bare minimum, and if that's not being respected or established, and it might have led me to feeling like I didn't matter. And I think that's why she really pushed for the article. It was her idea. She's like, you know, we can definitely spread the impact of what this can do. Let's write an article, I'll support it. And that's how we got to doing it.
And I think, you know, one of the key things that the article puts forward is that the names are so intrinsically linked to our whole identities. And then when I think back to the conversations we had earlier, and you spoke of your parents really loving names with meanings, and originally they thought it meant intelligent, and they weren't disproved on that, by the way, but they realised now it's happy. That was really important for them, which is why Farhana rather than Hannah was significant. So for people to keep getting your name wrong, they're not only saying a word that is attached to you or attributed to you, they're not including your identity. And I think that's really, really an important thing to tease out here. And again, if you're challenged by this notion, and I actually note some of the comments on the article, some people are challenged by the notion that a name is part of our identity. Anyway, I'll get to that in a second. Go back and listen to episode 28, Before Our Friends Die, because that really goes into detail, again, on this sort of the legalities around names as well, and forenames and surnames, and how they all shape an identity. Because way back, there were many blacksmiths, so people had the names of the last name of Smith, but it was the first name alongside that forename that was the identifier for that individual. It was really, really interesting discussion, so I recommend people go ahead and check it out. But yeah, in your article, Farhana, there is a real, real discussion around the identity piece. And you also, I think you do a great job as well in the way you present the argument, because you accept that there may be completely innocent reasons as to why people misspell names, things like autocorrect, but you just encourage them to have a little bit of, I guess, agency around the way they use these tools. Autocorrect can be a really, really useful tool. It doesn't mean to outsource any level of critical viewing of your own or proofreading of your own emails to ensure that you're not getting people's names wrong. Talk us through some of the other recommendations and your thoughts around those recommendations.
Yeah, so one of the recommendations, and I think it's made quite a huge difference, is the phonetic spelling on the email signature. I think that really humanizes the name. And I don't know about you, but if I see one, I do speak out loud to see if I could say it correctly. And also having the audio recording attached to email signature, that really helps as well. And I think I've noticed since the article came out, my name has been spelt more correctly. I've not received as many emails with my name spelt wrong. So it's definitely doable. And when you said about the autocorrect, I have been guilty of spelling people's names wrong through autocorrect, but I always apologize. And I think that's another one of the recommendations, is taking ownership. It's so easy to say, oh, I'm really sorry, that won't happen again. And maybe don't make explanations for why it happened. A simple sorry is just enough. And I've not really received many of them. So I don't know. I don't think I'm answering this very coherently, but yeah, the definitely just taking ownership of your mistake is a big one.
I think that is probably the biggest thing that stuck with me from this article when I read it first time around. not explaining, I guess, why I made the mistake or how I made the mistake, but just apologizing and owning that. And then also what you've given me is a bit of a critical lens for when I see those interactions take place, I spot when people stop apologizing and start explaining. And actually, often, if I'm going to be critical about it, I think people are explaining to make themselves feel better as opposed to making the person whose name you just got wrong feel better. So definitely. That is something you really, really tease out well. Interestingly enough, when we talk about names and we talk about the way in which we can help people pronounce our own names, for instance, if that's the way we're going to go down, phonetics, I've always been challenged by it. And actually, there is a bonus clip of the conversation I had with Jane, because Jane isn't a fan of phonetics. She definitely is a fan of people saying their name and then hearing it in an audio way. But phonetics are difficult to, you know, first of all, I really struggle to spell my name phonetically because...
Mm-hmm. So do I.
It's difficult, right? Like, so my name's Kavan. Yeah. But if I say K, someone might read that as Kavan. Someone might read it as, I don't know, Kavan or whatever. So it's really, really difficult to get it right. However, if I say my name's Kavan, then that's effective. That can work. So yeah, Jane isn't a major fan of phonetics, but the audio thing is really, really strong. Having said that, I think I've been in situations, to your point earlier, where I've seen someone's name spelt phonetically, and then one of the things you again say in the article is actually, even if you're not sure, just ask. That is not difficult. So I see your name phonetically. I think I probably said it right or wrong. Doesn't matter. I ask you, can I just check the pronunciation of your name? And then, hey, presto, we're off on a better foot than if I butchered it. So I think there's some really practical solutions in this article. And I definitely, if you haven't read it and you're listening to this, I encourage you to go ahead and read it, because it's so simple. We're not asking you to do a major amount in this article. It's like, you know, how should I pronounce your name? It's important for me to say it correctly. If someone points out you made a mistake, acknowledge it, apologize, and don't make excuses. And there's be open to being challenged or corrected. That is a really, really interesting one, because I think my experience would be easy, and I'm sure you could agree, Farhana, our experiences would be easier if people were more open to being challenged or corrected.
I don't know about you, but I find it really hard to correct someone.
Yes, I completely
agree. That's from years of, well, maybe that year seven experience of being told, no, I'm just going to say it how I want to say it, might have affected me in a way. But I definitely find it really hard to say, oh, I'm really sorry, but my name's actually pronounced Farhana. So it would be easy if people said, how do I say it?
Yeah.
It's important for me to get it right.
Yeah. I completely agree. And I think the onus, particularly when there is a power dynamic, is on the person who holds the power to create that openness and create that open environment. Otherwise, obviously, you open people up to having to expose themselves and potentially put themselves at risk by correcting someone. And that may be interpreted as a challenge, when actually it's just a simple correction of their name, because it's their identity. We've spoken a lot about Candy and her allyship, but I guess that could be interpreted as an individual person who just got it right. So what are some of the ways in which someone listening to this right now can also show up and be an ally?
Well, I have seen a lot of people with traditionally simpler names like Ellie Smith
Yep.
add their email signature, the phonetic spelling and the audio file. And I do get what Jane's saying about the phonetic spelling, but I think having both covers all
I
bases
agree.
because some people might prefer the phonetic way of saying it. Like, but yeah, the name for Hana, it was the bit in the middle of the ha. I wasn't sure how to spell that.
What did you go with, by the way?
I think I went with HAR, but
Farhana, yeah.
I still don't think that's correct.
It's difficult, and accents make a difference as well. Because I
Yeah.
found, so do you live in Newcastle?
Yeah.
So people up north tend to get my name more wrong than those who live down south. But I think that's just the way I say it. So I say Cavan, and then people up north tend to say Cavan, and I think they're actually saying the same
Cavan.
thing. But I just think there's an accent thing there. Which do you find that accents have a have an impact on your name?
Yeah, I do. Some I get a lot of Fahana.
For
Fahana.
Hannah, yeah.
Yeah. Or really posh like Fahana. It depends
Farhana,
on where the emphasis goes on the name.
yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting. And I suppose one thing I can't put down now is the lens where I see it in everyday practice. Like I follow a lot of combat sports and there's a lot of challenging names to say. And the way people just dismiss it, like, oh, whatever his name is. And then that's accepted. That is genuinely accepted that people can just say that and move on. And yeah, maybe this conversation will help influence people and help them see it more.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because I remember I once took my grandma to a hospital appointment and her name was Azizun Nessa Chowdhury. And one of the nurses was like, I'm not even going to attempt that. I'm just going to call you Mrs. Chowdhury. And I was like, how do
Yeah.
I? Like, I felt really bad because my grandma can't speak English, or she couldn't speak English. And I was like, I feel like I'm her advocate here, but I didn't know how to address that situation. So it was a really, it was an interesting one. I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna let her call her Mrs. Chowdhury at this point. I don't know how to address this.
I guess there's ways. So for example, in actually you're right, actually, in exclusively every scenario where someone says, you know what, I'm just gonna call you Mr. Brian. Or they've not said, I'm just gonna call you. They've looked at the paper, they've stumbled for a good 2.3 seconds or something like that, and said, Mr. Brian? Right, and then they've called everyone else by their first name and that sort of stuff, right? So I've noticed the difference there. In that particular instance, I've accepted what's going on. But I think if I was to redo that one and have an ally on my shoulder, I might say, do you know what, should we go through it together? Like, Kavan. Like, and it might be an opportunity. And it's really difficult because, like we were talking about earlier, it's so normalized, you would look like the challenge. You would look like the barrier there in that scenario. But I think we have to own that. I think if there's anything we take away, people like you and I take away from this conversation, is we have to own that disruptive label, because otherwise our names, our family members' names are going to get butchered forever, unless you get the odd ally who reads this article and feels inspired. So I think there's some work for us to do here as well. It's crazy. Okay, so we've spoken about the recommendations, and I want to speak a little bit about the actual responses to this article as well, because one of the things you pick up on is the fact that actually the while in some instances these things can be innocent mistakes, and we accept that, and I think that isn't up for dispute in this conversation, but they are microaggressions, and I don't think that's up for debate either. They are definitely
Yeah.
microaggressions, and that challenges some people, I think. What do you think?
So one of the things I got quite a bit is, so, for example, someone called Jeff, they tell me, oh, well, my name gets spelt with a J rather than a G. What do you say to that? And I always think, well, there's that extra added level for people who are from minority backgrounds where you wonder, is it because of your race as well? And it kind of, I don't know about you, but I kind of feel like I go into a spiral and I think, oh, was it because of my ethnicity? Was it because of this? Was it because of that? Was it because I'm a woman? Like, I don't matter as much. Like, these kinds of questions go through your head.
Yep.
I don't dispute that people who have traditional anglicised names often get their names spelt incorrectly, but I do encourage people to look into microaggressions and how that can affect people. So I definitely think, well, yeah, we do address microaggressions in the article, and it can be a point of contention with some people where they don't believe in microaggressions, which is really hard.
Yeah.
But I do, there's so many good books out there, and I can make some recommendations for what people can read.
Yeah, please do. And I'll tell you what, we'll put those recommendations in the description below, so you can have a look and check those out. And I think one of the ways to describe a microaggression, you do define it in the article. So again, I recommend people go and read that article. But, you know, it's almost like the straw that broke the camel's back at times. So yes, mm-hmm. an individual instance of somebody saying your name wrong in an email or in an interaction in isolation may not be damaging to your psyche, to your identity, to your belonging. But mm-hmm. it's like death by a thousand paper cuts. Over time, consistently, persistently, by people in power, by people who are meant to support you, by people who perhaps dismiss you separately, that is all damaging. That is all challenging. And that is certainly a microaggression that accumulates to become a macroaggression and has an impact on our well-being. So without doubt, this is a real problem. So what I want to do is talk a little bit about the response to the article, because I think that's really interesting. And one of the first things I want to highlight is actually, I didn't realize this, but in my research, I recognize Jane Pilcher commented on this on December 9th, 2022. And she shared her resources and her work in the area. So that's really, really interesting to see that full circle moment happen. But there's a lot of you know, fantastic responses. Excellent and important article. Thank you for Hannah and Candy. This should be a part of regular training in all walks of life. You really hit the nail on the head. Thank you for sharing this. I also think you suit this name. It has a beautiful meaning. So they must know. They must have a bit of background on what Farhana means there.
That was my mum.
Oh, wow. Go on. I did not. Go on. That is amazing. That is amazing. Okay. So you've got some real supporters. I love that. I love that mum commented on the article. That is amazing. Karina says, excellent article. She's often misnamed and always correct people in a friendly way. And I'm always surprised how people react with hostility to my correction. Couldn't agree more. Karina, that is, it's difficult. And I think, like I said earlier, we just have to own that potential for being labelled as a disruptor, because ultimately, and one of the concepts Jane brings up in our conversation is around renaming. You would never let anyone rename you for Hannah to Hannah anymore. You would never let that happen. So for someone to come in and try and attempt that, you should respond. And you do. And we should respond as a collective of people whose name gets butchered. There was a couple of things I wanted to pick up on. Where was it? Here we go. This I thought was really quite interesting. So someone supports the article and says that, you know, persistent misspelling and mispronunciation is disrespectful. They go on to say that we should also be aware in return that the person addressing this may be dyslexic. So the point around the phonetics exists there as well. So it might be difficult for them to interpret. They may have a hearing problem. So that may be difficult for them to interpret the audio version. Or they may lack sufficient ability at verbal mimicry, which I think is really, really powerful, because sometimes I ask people to say their name, they tell me, and my brain still can't process it. So actually, I need to sound it out a few times. And I imagine that is quite a laboursome process for that person. Likewise, I certainly know it is for me on the other side. I think perhaps the overall utopia of this conversation is actually just creating a name comfortable culture. One that where we mm-hmm. can just understand each other's names, even if it takes time. Because I think we're in such a... like I say, things are competing for our attention. We just want things to be quick, easy and simple. But actually, getting names right is important and may take time as well. Someone I disagreed with said a few things in response to the article. They said, there's a lot of great advice in here. I love just offering an apology and not explaining it. And of course, turn autocorrect off. Autocorrect, if it was off, my emails would look terrible. So I'd keep it on and just make sure you check. But they also go on to say that they as a person with a name who gets misspelled and often mispronounced by people of all cultures, they think the greatest amount of suffering is on the notion that our names are our identities. Mm-hmm. Now, we touched on this earlier in the article, but I disagree with this person, because they talk about, I don't want the fact that someone misnames me to be the reason why I feel like I don't matter. My identity are my thoughts about me. I get to choose however I think about myself, regardless of others' behaviors. Someone who makes a mistake does not hold any kind of power over me. I'm proud of who I am. And yes, even frequent errors won't make me feel differently. That's an interesting perspective. And it's not one that I necessarily agree with, because I speak in episode 28 of Before Our Friends Die around graduation. And how graduation was a major moment, you know, both in the lead up to it, in like I said, trying to figure out an adequate phonetic spelling of my name, And then during it, you're sitting there, you're waiting in graduation. And I'm sure I'm hearing a few names getting butchered already. So I know mine's coming up. And then it happens. And then it's like, oh, okay. So I've spent all this time, all this money, all this studying. And it's got butchered. And then, of course, the aftermath of having a video there forever that says your name wrong. And I think my reaction in the actual video is just, you know, I shake my head. You've had two graduations thus far, I imagine. How did they go?
I had so much anxiety over that I actually emailed beforehand to ask, is there any way I can ensure that my name gets spelled correctly? And both times I got an email saying, oh, no, the people who say them are very experienced, they'll know how to say it. And I was like, but that still didn't really give me much reassurance.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of people who said my name think they've said it right, but they haven't. But luckily for me, both times they were said correctly.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. And it's very interesting, I think, to see the responses to this article, because people do have different perspectives. But on the whole, there is a real support for this kind of work. And it's very good to see that it's taking place not only in Newcastle University, but also in Nottingham, Trent, and other places as well. So basically, 2 years on, this article says it was authored by Farhana Chowdhury. But that's no longer your name, is it?
Well, I've since got married and I have changed my name to Farhana Williamson.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. And a few people have said to me, but you're a feminist. Why have you changed your name? But I think part of feminism is having that decision-making power to decide if I do want to change my name or not. I decided to change it. I quite like having ownership over my own name and choosing whether to change it. And I think I can go by both. That's up to me if I want to. So at university, I am still Farhana Chowdhury, but on my social medias, and if I do go for a job outside of academia, I will go with Farhana Williamson. But I think having the option of both is completely fine.
I'm interested. You just said on social media and on job applications, you'll go by Williamson. Is that a conscious decision? And may I ask for your reasoning?
Oh, it's going to sound terrible, but I have read articles where people with traditionally ethnic names get less interviews. And, you know, that to me is absolutely terrible. And I feel like I might be being part of the problem by changing my name. But I also don't want my name to disadvantage me in my career, because, you know, there's a lot of other things that may disadvantage me. But I'm worried about my name being part of that. And I've seen in academia people get less published articles if they have traditionally ethnic names. So it was a very hard decision for me. I don't know. I feel like I'm explaining this terribly.
No, definitely not. And I think, you know what? I want to pick up on something you said earlier, because you said that feminism is about you having the choice and the power to be able to make that choice. You feel empowered by that. I wouldn't dispute that whatsoever. You then said that you acknowledge that the literature shows you that names that are Eurocentric tend to get more offers for job interviews. They tend to get more published articles, so on and so forth. That's fact. The data shows us that. So that's not up for dispute either. And I think the fact that you're using your power to get into the system so that when you're there, you can make that change, I don't think that's a problem. What I would say is we have to acknowledge these things exist so that we can figure out and navigate a solution to them. They shouldn't exist, sure, but you taking advantage of them because you've now married someone with the last name Williamson, the only time I would say that's a problem is if you married that person because of their last name. And I would go out on a limb and say you didn't do that.
No, I didn't. But I also want to become a Candy and be a person in a position of power and make some like structural changes, systemic changes.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, Candy's been phenomenal at being an ally for me and really mentoring me, sponsoring me and getting my name out there. And I think, you know, I want a career where I can make some of those changes as well and be part of the solution rather than be part of the problem.
Definitely. I think as positive and as optimistic as I like these conversations to be, I think it would be silly of me to suggest that Candy could have been the same level of impact as an ally, or sorry, could have had the same level of impact as an ally at the start of her career versus what she can have now as someone who is the Dean of Research and Culture and Strategy at Newcastle. Mm-hmm. So when she started, as an early career researcher, I'm sure she would have had the same values and integrity then, but the power is different now. And that's what means she can have the impact of saying, okay, let's get you an article on Wonky, let's make it have impact, and let's get it however many views and get it on a podcast platform like this. That's only because she has the power now. So I think you're doing the right thing in getting yourself in that position, because those values and that integrity is going to stick around in you. And when you have the opportunity to support somebody else, you'll be there. So I think it's the right thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, maybe having the name Williamson might help me get there a little bit easier.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, careers are hard enough as they are, so using anything you can to make it easy for yourself, I don't think is wrong. But yeah, it was, I did spend quite a lot of time thinking, like, should I keep Chowdhury my job and, you know, be Williamson in my outside of career life? But yeah, maybe meshing the two isn't a bad thing.
As a side note, I was in a meeting with someone the other day and they were talking about the rhetoric around, you know, being tough and tough life and adversity. And they said, actually, do you know what? I'm in my soft life era and I want things to be the path of least resistance as possible. And if changing your name gives you that lesser resistance, by all means, all power to you. So, okay, 2 years later, what do you think the legacy of this article is?
Well, I still get people saying, oh, I've read your article and these are my experiences. And I think that's so powerful because, you know, even when writing, I was like, maybe it is just me. Even though I knew deep down it wasn't, I know it's a very common problem. And I thought maybe it gives people the space to share their experiences. And I think in the comments people have. And that, yeah, it makes me sad, but also makes me happy. But it makes me feel optimistic that there are some changes. And like I said, I've noticed my name gets spelled less incorrectly now than I did 2 years ago. So maybe there are changes happening there.
Result. And in your own sort of career journey, you're coming to the end of your PhD. You've got that crossroads of, you know, academia or industry. Where can people keep up with your journey? And where can people stay in tune with where you go next?
Oh, well, definitely LinkedIn. I don't really share much on there, but I do share the milestones and anything exciting. And if I have a new study coming out, I'll definitely be sharing it on there. It will be in the name for Hannah Williamson, but I am I'm proud of my name. It tells a story, and you know, yeah, getting married 6 months ago, that's another part of my journey. So changing my name is an exciting part of that. I'm not on Twitter or X anymore.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It's quite toxic at times.
Yeah, that was exactly it. I think I shared the article on there and I got some not very nice responses. So,
really?
Yeah, a lot of, you know, happens to me and people weren't getting it.
So right.
I think it landed in the wrong audience.
So you found your tribe now. You found your tribe.
Yeah. I have. So LinkedIn, I think, is the best way to reach me, and my email. So I'm happy for that to be shared as well.
Yeah, I'll put that in the description below as well as the link to your LinkedIn. So have you got any final words of advice to people whose name gets said wrong, and then to allies as well? So if you could give one bit of advice to someone whose name gets pronounced wrong, and then one bit of advice to somebody who could be an ally.
So this is a bit of a hard one. I recognize it's hard, but don't be afraid to correct people. I found that really hard, especially being an early career researcher. But it's the only way people will learn, and maybe feeling awkward of being corrected might help people in the future to not make that mistake again if they do feel awkward. And for people who are allies, I'd say read the article.
Yep, absolutely.
And maybe think of ways that you can make other people feel more empowered to share their name correctly, or you know, have it being said correctly. So add it to your email signature. When you introduce yourself to someone, say, my name's Fahana, this is how you say it, how can I say your name correctly? I mean, I have the recommendations in the article, but maybe for me, definitely, I've been making a conscious effort to ask people if I'm not sure how to say their name.
Yeah.
And just remembering what I've said.
Thank you very, very much. I'm so glad we got this conversation in the books. It's been about 18 months in the making. This has been Before Our Friends Die. You've been joined by me, Kavan, and Fahana Chowdhury, or Fahana Williamson. It has been an incredible conversation that really picks up again on our topic of names and identities. It's a really fascinating one for me. I love it. I always find, you know, a lot of resonance in these sort of conversations, because, you know, it happens every single day. It's the one thing that you own that people have control over every single day in every single interaction. So make sure you bear that in mind. When you encounter somebody whose name you cannot say correctly or you doubt yourself over, just ask them. Open the conversation and really be open to that challenge too. If you want to get in touch with us, please don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Before Our Friends Die Pod. We're also available on X or Twitter at Aki and Saltfish. Where else are we? TikTok, YouTube, Spotify, all those fantastic platforms. Make sure you please do check us out. Give us a 5-star rating and review and share us on your favorite podcast platform, because it really helps us grow and all those great algorithm related things. Fahana's PhD is in human behavior. And if I can give you one nudge to your human behavior, it would be support a podcast today and support this one too. Thank you very much. And don't forget, if you've got any questions, Aki and Saltfish at gmail.com. Take care. And goodbye.